A lot of times these little meditative monologues of mine have, well, they always have titles. Sometimes the title is obvious up front, sometimes it's clear as the presentation goes on. Today, it's a secret until the very end. The title of this meditation is The Punchline. It's the last thing you'll hear. The text comes from Galatians chapter 3. For as many of you as were baptized into Christ have put on Christ. And there is neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. The things that divided the community and much culture in first century Palestine. Our list might look similar, maybe not Jew and Greek, but perhaps Jew and Muslim, Muslim and Christian, maybe Jew and Christian. Slave and free, maybe more accurately, labor and management. Male and female, still on the list. And other things, I think, as well. Red state, blue state, gay or straight. Tea party or pot party? Pepperoni or sausage? Black and white. Did we not all get a lesson this week that that's still on the table? Here we are 150 years post-Emancipation Proclamation, 50 years post-Voting Rights Act, Civil Rights Act, and all it takes is a snippet of video at the right place and at the right time to challenge us and make us defensive over the extent to which perhaps race is still an issue in our country. Well, in my line of work, we spend a lot of time talking about how there are still differences in life chances and outcomes for people of different racial and ethnic backgrounds. And most generally, we would split it in terms of majority and minority, or Anglo and other, if you will. And the data do tell us some things. For example, if you look at the ethnic and racial makeup of the U.S. Congress, you would expect, all things being equal, that roughly 25% to 30% of the Congress would be either African American, Hispanic, or minority. And the rate in the House of Representatives is about half of that. We've only had 4 African American senators in U.S. history, one of which is the current president. We would have expected perhaps a mix of 12 out of 100 currently, now only 1, etc. Minorities are still underrepresented in Congress. Maybe more reflective of some of what has happened and continues is the difference in net worth. If you're looking for an indicator of life chances and upward mobility, income is part of it, but net worth is actually more accurate. How much money do you have left over if you turn everything you have into cash and pay off all your debts? That's what net worth is. On average in the U.S., net worth is about $125,000 for the average American family, if you will, for the average American Anglo family. Minority net worth is about 1/6 of that, $20,000 or so. And the major reason for that distinction, that 6-to-1 difference between majority and minority net worth, is inheritance. It has very little to do with initiative or industry. It has more to do with how well you picked your parents. Let's think about this for just a second. We're 150 years post-Emancipation Proclamation. Inherited wealth has to do with what holdings and property and investments people pass down to their heirs. 150 years ago, African Americans had no property. In fact, they were the property that others inherited. It takes a long time to catch that up. 50 years ago, educational opportunities were much different. We have come a long way. But the difference in net worth still reflects that we're a work in progress. And I'll return to that a little bit later. More prominently, though, and maybe more relevantly than all of these statistics, is the matter of perception. Racial distinctions and disparities in this country, maybe even in our own minds and in the minds of people we know, have everything to do with perception. And perception is all a matter of choice. W.I. Thomas is one of our chief architects of social psychology, and he is most famous for saying, what we perceive to be real becomes real in its consequences. And now to the matter of perception. Really interesting to me that Fox News and the NAACP this week found some common ground. That is, they both got snookered by an expert at creating perception. Andrew Breitbart runs a couple of websites, and he apparently makes his living shooting hornet's nests with pellet guns and then running for cover. The perception that was created by a heavily edited snippet of videotape put everything else that was going on in this country on the back burner. Isn't that interesting how that can happen? Perception. Let's bring it into this room for a minute. I'm going to do for you what I do on the first day of every class that I teach in introductory sociology. This is the closing bit of my first day, and it's time for audience participation. I want you to imagine how we take an observation and construct from it a theory to make sense out of what we observe in an ordinary way. Let me give you a very ordinary observation, and then let's try to make some sense out of it. Observations are always, in some sense, limited, and this observation is limited in a very obvious way initially. A man, so we left out women in this observation, a man is running down the street. Get a picture of that in your mind. A man is running down the street. For what purpose might a man be doing this? Anybody? Why?
Exercise?
He's exercising, of course. What other reason might a man be running down the street?
To get help or to be helped.
To get help or be helped, sure. Another reason? He's running from the cops. All right. One more.
Catching a cab,
maybe he's late, okay? The help one, that's a new one. I've been doing this for 15 years, probably 10 times a year, and the top three answers are exercise guy, late guy, running from the cops guy. Top three answers. How do we know he's exercising? What other information might we gather? Sharpen our observation a little bit.
He's
wearing running clothes, etc., etc. How do we know he's late? Looking at his watch, umbrella, chasing, you know. How do we know he's being chased by the cops? Looking behind him, carrying a television set? Okay, now, perception time. Imagine in your mind 5,000 Americans randomly selected, and they are going to answer this question. They've been given the scenarios. We have exercise guy, late guy, TV set guy. Which of the three do you think a majority of 5,000 randomly selected Americans would say is the black guy? Perception. We've tested this stuff. There's an interesting study done a while back where whites and blacks were asked to imagine that tomorrow morning you wake up different. If you're white, you wake up black. If you're black, you wake up white. What's your reaction? Most of the white respondents said, if that happened to me, somebody would have to pay. Most of the blacks who woke up white in their minds said, I would pay for this to happen because of the world we still live in. They have replicated the logic of this study hundreds of times, giving fake job interviewees identical resumes, but simply changing black or white, if you will. Perception remains a part of our life. And we are a work in progress on this. I think the most poignant thing that's ever happened to me in my work happened about 10 years ago when I was teaching a course I have called Alcohol, Drugs, and Society, in which I get a lot of healthcare, prospective healthcare workers in my class. And in this class at night, and night school gets a different crowd than day school, if you will, at Tech too. In this night school class was a registered nurse who'd gotten her certification at a hospital program and was coming back to Tech to get a Bachelor of Science in Nursing and hope to be someday soon a nurse practitioner. In any case, a registered nurse in my class, we were talking about this stuff, young black woman. And she said, what I do in the course of my work, I work my regular job, but I also occasionally pick up extra shifts at other hospitals, even in some of the neighboring towns, Leveland and so on. And often as not, when I pick up these extra shifts, I'm going to be the charge nurse because I'm the RN. Now let me remind you, or let me tell you at this point, that this woman is not only black, but has uncommonly dark skin. And she said, more often than not, when I go to a place where they don't know me and I tell them I'm here for the shift, they don't assume I'm the charge nurse. They assume I'm the aide. They assume I'm the nurse's aide, and at this point she started to cry. I will never forget it. Perception becomes reality. And we may be 150 years post-Emancipation Proclamation, but we still carry perceptions, and we know people for whom these perceptions have consequence. And Andrew Breitbart fed them this week brilliantly. And both the NAACP and Fox News and the Obama administration bid on it and bid on it hard. We can choose what we see. My teacher in grad school wrote a book about the history of American Catholics, the recent history of American Catholics. The title of the book is The Search for Common Ground. And he surveyed people who were Roman Catholic who came of age pre-Vatican II, came of age in the 40s and 50s. He surveyed people who came of age right around 1960. Vatican II was 1962. And then he surveyed people who came of age later and simply asked them about their perceptions of the world, their perceptions of their faith, their perceptions of their practices. Pretty significant difference among the post-Vatican II and the pre-Vatican II on their attitudes towards and experiences with things like birth control. And yet, even the post-Vatican II users of birth control and those who advocated as a useful and good thing for society also said, we're good Catholics. You know what? Rome is just wrong on this one, and they'll have to live with it. What united all three groups of Roman Catholics were things like the virgin birth, the divinity of Christ, what happens at the Mass, and so on. In other words, they agree on the big things. What he found was there is much common ground. There are a few cracks in the sidewalk that you can look at and focus on if you wish. But we are far more united in our faith, at least his study of Catholics, than we are divided by things like birth control and even abortion, although that's more contentious. We can choose to focus on common ground or cracks in the sidewalk. I had a really interesting experience with one of our own beloved a couple months ago. One of our members and I, who typically have very little in common politically, found some common ground on the red-blue question. And we found it wonderfully enjoyable. I don't want to tell you who this person is specifically, but her initials are Nelda Dalby. We found common ground. And then, of course, we found also that there is so much more that we have in common with regard to faith and family and friendship. We can choose what we come to perceive by seeking to see the common ground or the cracks in the sidewalk. And we're all a work in progress. I think the most important thing to remember this week about the Shirley Sherrod story is that the speech she gave, snippets of which were videotaped, the point of which was she, like all of us, are a work in progress on the race question. We are all coming to terms with how different we should make these differences out to be. And that puts us all in the same boat. We can choose to see the common ground. We can choose to see the cracks in the sidewalk. And now, the punchline. What you see is what you get. Amen.